From the Mercy One studio.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and the Uncommon Good provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Learn more at mchs.edu.
Welcome, folks, to the Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
And I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from these United States of America, here nestled warmly in the middle of the country, Des Moines, Iowa. Which, Bud, I have to say, the weather today is delectable, I think is the word.
It is nice. I saw a headline briefly that a heat dome is descending upon the southeast.
Hopefully we're not the southeast, right?
I don't think so.
We're the edge of the southeast.
I don't know how far the heat dome reaches, but we prayed for rain a couple weeks ago on the radio, and it's been better recently.
Absolutely. Did you were you around for any of the heat domes when you lived here the first time?
I feel like I've been in a heat dome before. I know North Carolina definitely had heat domes.
North Carolina is just a heat dome. I'm talking about the weather event heat dome.
Okay. I'm not sure. I do like today, in today's world, when we were growing up, it was like, it's hot, it's cold, it's snowing, it's raining.
Right.
But now it's really creative names for weather events.
Yeah, heat domes.
Yeah. What's it when it snows and there's a tornado as well?
Snownado? I just made that up. No, you're right. We didn't have cool. Like, I also like how you can blame things on old weather events. So people have started to call things derecho trees.
Oh.
You know, which are like.
So like chaos theory?
Yeah. I think it's trees that untimely met their demise in a sort of strange way.
I thought you were thinking chaos theory, where like if a butterfly sneezes in Hawaii, it can cause rain.
I do like that idea. So we can call it derecho butterflies.
If anything happens these days, we're just still blaming derecho. Like my kid drops a plate in the kitchen, it's like, well, derecho.
That's right.
Like, started this series of events.
You were talking about a minor league baseball game you watched that like really came down to the end, and so you could have like called like one of those things like a derecho error.
Yeah, well, Friday was fun. The iCubs were up 9-3 going in the ninth, and then they gave up 5 solo homers. And it was amazing to watch because everyone in the stadium was looking forward to the fireworks display, and the manager was just like, I'm riding this one out. And then, and they were slugging, and they were like going into the river, and finally the manager, it got 9-8, and he's like, this is over. So he brought in a new guy.
He just wanted to see to take it to the
break. It was like batting practice, home run derby, and they just would not tap out.
That's fantastic. Well, speaking of people who don't tap out, Mercy College of Health Sciences, right, who underwrites our show. I'm the senior advisor for mission initiatives and spiritual health there, and also the director of the newly founded Center for Human Flourishing. Bud, what do you do for the old college?
I'm academic dean at the college right now, and since coming back, I've really had to wrap my mind around all that's going on, because when I was there, we had the three-term system and, you know, some different ways of plugging in online and whatnot. Now we have accelerated BSN. We've got some online options, Mercy Plus. And so when I look at the academic calendar, it's confusing but exciting because there's like 8 different semesters that we're keeping track of.
It's like that meme where like the woman's thinking and there's all the math problems going across.
Yeah, above my head.
Bud has a beautiful mind is what we're getting at. And so Mercy College underwrites our show, mchs.edu. And as Bud has alluded to, multiple ways for you to be a part of what we're at Mercy College, extending the ministry of healing into the world. And as Bud just mentioned, many different, not only degrees you can end up with, but modes and means to those degrees.
Yeah, modes and means, and also some exciting things on the margins. I don't know if that's the right term, but happening around the academic part. So I know you've gotten the Center for Human Flourishing going, and when I broke into your office yesterday or walked into the office, you had just gotten done recording a podcast, and so that's kind of exciting to look forward to. More Bo Bonner on some of the issues that we've all been wrestling with and thinking about, specifically related to health and human flourishing.
Specifically, we had former students who had been on the COVID wards, and to get them talking about what it means to be sort of mercy, you know, incarnated in the world. It's like I told the student, it's just an honor and a privilege that, to teach anyone, really, but to know that people that you've taught about, you know, servant leadership and mercy and Catherine McCauley, that they're sort of embodying that in the middle of the greatest crisis most of us have lived through, Yeah, we don't deserve it, bud, but we get to be those people.
Well, it's easy for me on social media to complain about, oh, CNN had this bad take, or Fox News had this bad take, whatever, you know, wherever you happen to land. But I think the nice thing about what you're talking about is bringing a student on who has that Mercy formation and then actually served on the front line. So it's not like an armchair quarterback. But if you're, you know, if you get a little weary of like the cable news take, whatever it happens to be, you can turn to something like that and hear, you know, I think a perspective that's informed by experience, but also maybe less ideological that you'd get from like your mainstream sources.
Yeah, so that's going to come soon. But I actually think that's a very good segue into our guest today. Our guest is Jason Blakely. He wrote the book We Built Reality: How Social Sciences Infiltrated Culture, Politics, and Power, and exactly that idea about what counts for evidence, how we sort of create what we're expecting the world to look like, and how we sort of lean against that if we're Catholics. That's what we're going to be talking about on the show today.
Yeah, I was looking a little bit at his work online, and I think it's going to be really helpful wherever you're coming from, because in today's context, we're all wrestling with questions of, like, where do I turn for accurate information? But even, like, information makes it sound too statistical and cold. Like, the truth, how do we take our faith and understand all the complex, you know, as you mentioned, difficult events that have been happening around us?
So it's going to be a wonderful show today. Jason Blakely, a professor at Pepperdine. So we'll be talking with him right after the break. So mchs.edu for Mercy College. It underwrites the show. We're glad to have you with us, folks, here on Iowa Catholic Radio. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher for the Uncommon Good, and we will be back right after this. Folks, if you want to leave a comment for the show or let us know any of your thoughts, you can do so through the Zipwhip line. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, the Zipwhip line. Hashtag UCG for the Uncommon Good. Bud, do we have anything off the top of your mind that we're beckoning listeners to text in about?
We always like feedback on the content of the show, so thoughts on the interview. But today, if you have any ideas or commentary on your favorite, least favorite, most interesting weather event, and what nickname you would give today's weather, you should use the Zipwhip line.
The Derecho Zipwhip line. No, I'm joking. 515-223-1150.
It's already trademarked.
515-223-1150. No, hashtag Derecho, just to make sure that it's trending again. But yes, that's another thing. We should ask if people have pictures of a Derecho tree.
There were some in our yard.
That's right. If you have a Derecho tree, send it to the Zipwhip line. 515-223-1150. This is the Uncommon Good, and we'll be back right after this.
Iowa Catholic Radio and the Iowa Catholic Radio Foundation welcomes country artist Lori Morgan, presented by Mercy One. Lori Morgan.
Except for Monday, which was never good anyway. Tuesday, I get a little sigh.
To the Horizon Event Center, July 15th. With Jesse Keith Whitley and Eli Alger.
Eli Alger.
Learn more at celebratecountry.org.
Celebratecountry.org.
Sponsored by Valiant Wealth Family Office. Iowa Catholic Radio welcomes Matt Maher.
Lord, I need, oh, I need.
For an evening of praise and worship to the Jamie Heard Amphitheater in West Des Moines, Saturday, June 12th at 6 p.m.
I'm alive because he.
With special guest Matt Baird, First Encounter, and JMMJ.
One, two, three, four.
Learn more at nightfireconcerts.org.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Catholic Women Now provided in part by Permar Security, a Catholic-owned family business providing security solutions for homes and businesses since 1953. Permar Security, 515-244-5660, permarsecurity.com.
Hi, this is Joe Stopulis. Thank you to construction professionals for underwriting Man Up, Monday mornings at 9 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Construction professionals, a Catholic family business built on a strong foundation. CPCustomHomes.com.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Thank you, Dental Associates, for supporting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Dental Associates, addressing your smile, needs, and dreams. 515-225-6742. Online at DesMoines-DentalAssociates.com.
Back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher joining you this Wednesday on Iowa Catholic Radio. Thank you for listening to the show. Today, our guest is Dr. Jason Blakely, Associate Professor of Political Science at Pepperdine University and author of the new book, We Built Reality, How Social Science Infiltrated Culture, Politics, and Power. Jason, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, I have to use you, Jason, as a warning to any other guests. So, Jason, I reached out to him a few months ago, and he very kindly told me he would love to be on the show, but he needed to wait a few months in order to do it. If you're going to do that, that means that I have, like, months' worth of questions to talk to you about. So that's my only warning. So your book, We Built Reality, I can't praise it enough. I would tell people it's worth the introduction, the conclusion alone, let alone everything that else that happens in the book. And one of the things that I want to dork out about is, Jason, there's two things you bring up that have been two works that I have tried to get people to really imbibe for most of my career. One is your praise of Frankenstein as being very illustrative of the modern world. I just got done doing a class where we did modern classics, and I insisted we start with Frankenstein because I thought it was so elemental. But the other is Heidegger's idea of the standing reserve, that we look at the world through a technological lens where we sort of see everything as a resource to be used. If you don't mind me asking about either of those two works, when you talk to students or when you talk to people, do you get a sense that they understand what those works mean and why they're so important to decoding what we're going through in the modern world? Or is there a lot of explanation that needs to be had, and that sort of illustrates exactly the problem that you've been getting at in your book and other works?
I think it depends. And by the way, thanks so much for having me on. I've had some interactions with you guys on Twitter, and I appreciate being invited on, and I appreciate the kind words about the book. Yeah, I think that, you know, you're right to see Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is an absolutely brilliant novel, which many people are familiar with, and The Philosophy of Heidegger, which comparatively less people are familiar with, but to see them together because they both come out of a broader movement in Europe known to intellectual historians as Romanticism, which reacts against the view of the world as just mechanistic or machine-like. And so the whole story of Frankenstein is about the overestimation of human abilities to sort of manipulate reality, like you said, to treat reality entirely like a resource without sort of unintended consequences happening or it becoming even monstrous, as in the Frankenstein story, it becomes actually monstrous. Now, I think that it's a mixed bag in the world today. I think that this being Catholic radio, often Catholics, because of how they're formed by a sort of long tradition of theological humanism, are this resonates. The notion that you can overestimate human powers resonates with teachings on pride. The notion that rationality is not the highest thing resonates with church teachings that agape or self-giving love is actually completes understanding but goes beyond human understanding and rationality. So if it depends, because people come out of different traditions and cultural currents. At the same time, I think most modern people, I think it's fair to say, have some little bit, even if they're sort of on the side of a kind of, for lack of a better word right now, engineering mentality or hyper-rationalistic mentality, everyone has a little bit of this suspicion or resonance that comes out of romantic culture in Europe that maybe, you know, we are not quite as in control as we think we are. In fact, maybe even just now this pandemic was a moment where part of what was so difficult about it was we were unable to resolve it immediately scientifically. Granted, you know, don't want to discount the help we have from science in getting out of this, but it was beyond the power of science to resolve immediately, and that's sort of an uncommon experience for us as human beings in modern culture.
Yeah, and I think that I labeled the show today the cult of evidence and our heedless future. And I want to unpack all of that. There's a lot to unpack. You have such you put things very precisely, and then it's so wonderful to unpack. But I want to actually back up to something you said on that very robust intellectual stage, Twitter, the other day. I don't know if you coined the term or if you got it from someone, but you talked about political theodicy. And I know this can seem like we're going off on a rabbit trail, but I think it's very important to talk about why all this idea about standard reserve and cult of evidence and how we use it and heedlessness goes back to this idea, political theodicy, which you say is an elaborate and intellectually bankrupt effort to relocate all evils of the world outside one's own party, one's own movement, one's own leader. If you don't mind, can you talk about what you know, political theodicy, why is that important for us, especially as Catholics, to wrestle with, or I should say against, that impulse? Because I think talking about that will really get in people's minds why this idea about what is evidence has huge social and common good ramifications.
Sure, yeah. So I was, is a term I was sort of playfully inventing, or maybe I've heard it in the wider atmosphere. Theodicy is, of course, the traditional branch of theology that deals with the problem of vindicating the absolute goodness of God in the face of evils in the world. So it's mostly an area where theologians think about how can there be an absolutely good God if there are natural and societal evils in the world. What I meant by political theodicy is this tendency that I increasingly see among Americans. I can't speak to other countries, but as an American, I see a lot of us unwittingly sort of practicing an effort to remove evil from ourselves, from our group, from our party, from our movement, and find a way to always attribute the origin of evil to the opposing party, group, etc. So there's a kind of exercise that's going on where we're trying to basically, and unfortunately, I think we Christians aren't immune. I see people across different communities, traditions, spectrums doing this in the United States, but we're not immune right now from, unfortunately, not doing the mea culpa, not doing the examination of conscience or the self-accusation, and instead looking for ways to always unload evil on the surrounding world, which is something that runs against the grain of at least Catholic Christianity, the notion of original sin. We start from an affirmation of our own fallibility, so we should expect to find fallibility, we should expect to find sin in our various political movements collectively, not just in ourselves as individuals, as we're asked to do, say, at the beginning of Mass, you know, with the mea culpa. We should be able to also see that even in, and maybe this bridges to the other point you're making, that in our exercise of things that are good, like science, which most people would say is good, but then how do we use science? How do we employ it? How do we talk about it? Is that always good? Well, there it gets more complicated because our fallibility is entering in.
Yeah, Jason Budmar, it's an honor having you on the show, a joy having you on the show. I came across an article that you published in Church Life Journal about the new atheists, and it raised some important points in relation to what we're talking about. And one is, so most of us living in today's world avail ourselves of the benefits of science, and that tends to generate a real kind of like esteem for what science is able to accomplish. Your article points out that there are ways in which, you know, really renowned scientists kind of step outside their bounds, and they'll ground more disputable political claims, and like they give the impression that it's rooted in science and therefore, you know, almost like unchallengeable. So, for instance, with someone like Richard Dawkins, you point out, like, ironically, he kind of wields science in this civilization battle, you know, like kind of like keeping at bay the barbaric other. And that whole conversation raises, like, I've really been wrestling with this past year, where as Catholics, we want to resist that movement. But how do we balance, like, how do we navigate the tension between kind of like not falling into that sort of scientism, but also on the flip side, not resisting it to the point where you kind of tip over into superstition. And I guess what I have in mind is, like, you were kind of intimating with the pandemic, we absolutely had to rely on science to understand what was taking place. And then there were scientific breakthroughs or measures that helped us to, you know, start to emerge out of this. But like some of that was contested, even, you know, like we joke about Twitter, but in that sphere, you can see some pathologies in that respect.
Absolutely. And it's a very important problem that you're pointing to, because I think one way to think about it is to set up two poles. It simplifies it a little bit, but you could think of one temptation as the temptation toward a kind of myth that science can resolve all your problems, and that to merely point at evidence resolves moral and political problems for us. So, for example, I'm one of these people who thinks, yes, let's listen to epidemiologists. Maybe they're figuring out, maybe they're making mistakes, but ultimately it is rational to listen to epidemiologists if we want to understand how does the coronavirus behave, say, in closed spaces? Does it pass over into fomites on surfaces? I mean, that's something for science to answer. However, too often, and I do think we saw this in public policy, that the assumption that, say, the evidence says there's an X percent chance of catching coronavirus in room Y led to a sort of policy conclusion. Therefore, we ought to do this or we ought not to do that. And that's where I think we need to be careful. So we need to resist on one side that science is science, it's science. It like resolves certain factual questions for us. It resolves certain explanatory questions for us about the world. It's the best we've got, even for all its limitations in that domain. However, it doesn't answer other questions for us. Questions of how do we want our community to look? What are reasonable risks? What does it mean to protect the vulnerable? All these are questions that are questions about meaning, about deliberation, and something I talk about quite a lot in the book, fancy philosophical term, hermeneutics. How do we interpret the meanings? However, on the other side, and so I quite agree with you, the problem, one could slip from sort of the critique of these people like Dawkins who think that science somehow resolves moral problems, which it doesn't do. I mean, you can know, to take my example, how the coronavirus behaves in a room and still not have resolved the question, yeah, but do we want to live with that risk? Do we not want to live with that risk? What is the meaning of this practice or that practice? Like, should bars be open or should churches, when it caused a lot of anguish, right? And then, but on the other side, you can slip into sort of, if you like, again, to be sort of simple about it for now, a kind of postmodern, you know, everything is alternative facts. Like, you have your facts, I have my facts. And I kind of want to defend a middle position where, from most perspectives, we can affirm certain facts about the natural world that emerge from the natural sciences. However, that doesn't resolve for us the interpretive problem, the hermeneutic problem about what's the life we want to lead as a community democratically, what's the life we want to lead in the church, what's the life I want to lead, you know, we want to lead in our families, etc. Those are questions that scientists cannot resolve for us. So we need to resist both a sort of a myth that evidence on its own resolves moral questions. Whenever someone says the evidence resolves the moral question, the move to always make is to say, okay, but given those facts, ought we still to do X or Y? But on the other side, also to resist a trap that really a lot of people are falling into these days, which is just sort of a kind of frenetic skepticism where, like, nothing is true, right? And everything is up for grabs, which is also not a reasonable position.
Well, and at least in my view. You're talking about self-accusation, mea culpa. So I have to admit, part of what I've been looking forward to this show is I feel like I'm using it to air a personal grievance that is driving me crazy since this has all started. Which you can ask Bud. I've harped on this a lot, that actually evidence and evidence of any, like, anybody talking about evidence, it's going to be like 2 years out before we really have solid evidence about X, Y, or Z. I've been repeating this, right? Evidence in the middle of something is actually hard to get a firm grasp on. And so, you know, you said, you know, frenetic, but phrenesis, part of practical wisdom, right, is having principles in which to act on in the face of the lack of evidence. And it seems to me that the world just proved how bad we are at this. But this actually gets into the political theodicy side to me, because what happens is when we decide that the way to like sort of extinguish doubts or to extinguish whatever we want to push against is to make the other side, whatever the other is, the sort of grand thing that if we eliminate it, all problems go away. I think it follows on this, right? When we don't have a firm practical wisdom orientation which says that we're going to have to work on principle until there's firm evidence, and then we have to be okay with making, you know, resolving things, changing things. When we're not honest about that sort of comportment in the difficulties of life, what you turn to is scapegoats. And then evidence, mm-hmm. especially flimsy evidence, you can find whatever scapegoat you want. And that, to me, starts to be this cult of evidence problem and the heedlessness, which I think we'll talk about in the second segment of the show. But that in the face of difficulty with evidence, when you have a scientific worldview that there's going to be evidence and it will tell us what to do, it's like you said, when we lack that, we turn to political theodicy, and like you said, this sort of postmodern turn, right? Find the people that if we get them rid of them, we'll resolve all problems. I think those two things are sort of wedded together, and the last year has shown this.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to that. I think that there's some connection between the inability to practice self-accusation and a tendency to sort of deify your group, or it's pretty subtle. We don't catch ourselves in the act of doing this, really, because when we're doing it, we tend to think, well, I'm just right, and you know what I see and what my movement is after is right, sort of full stop. And we don't tend to see that. We don't tend to catch ourselves in this act of sort of sleight of hand of reshuffling guilt, evil, etc., onto another group. I might say, and this is another place where, Catholicism in America is in sort of stormy waters, is that I think the cult of evidence, as you're saying, this sort of scientism, as I call it, in We Built Reality, has actually entered into, I don't talk about this in the book, but has entered into even the self-understandings of different theologies. Mm-hmm. So Christians aren't really immune. So for instance, you take something like, to take an easy example, proof texting the Bible, right, which is not something Catholics tend to do. That tends to be a sort of evangelical practice. I go to one part of the text and I say, see, this is what it means. Catholics have a long tradition of sort of holistic historical reading of the Bible, where one passage doesn't resolve the issue for you. You need to read it in light of the whole tradition and a kind of discernment. But I think that Catholics are also not immune from treating their religion, almost aping the scientism around them, as something that they are just absolutely rationally certain of. And so then they go around sort of creating scapegoats of everyone who can't immediately see, look, this is rational certitude. Thomas Aquinas showed me that. And so now I have no patience for you, my atheist brother and sister, my, agnostic aunt and uncle. I have no patience for you because you can't see truth. And so in a weird way, I think no one is really immune from this right now. And I do take that to be a distortion of Catholic understanding. But I think it happens to Catholics as well.
Actually, yeah. So if you turn Thomas Aquinas, the Catechism, the faith into a standing reserve from which you mine arguments to win whatever argument you're having, you've let the worldview you're fighting win. I'll be that bold. Maybe you won't. I'll say that's what we see all the time, is if you turn the truths of the Catholic faith into just sort of a resource, a natural resource, a human resource, that's... And so I'm with you. I think that like we start to see that across a lot of authority now, like the authority of social, mm-hmm. the authority of social science, the authority of natural sciences, but even the authority of the church, the great temptation mm-hmm. to make it one more resource that we can
exactly.
wield.
Yeah, but yes. This is
and then you end up with the church's power, not as an encounter with the sacraments, a relationship with a mystery that all of us are journeying toward, and sort of the Augustinian notion that we're on a journey toward the heavenly city, toward a mystery. Instead, the church becomes, you know, like Pope Francis says, a big NGO or a big bureaucratic organization that is trying to sort of conquer the world ideologically by spreading its ideas. I mean, of course, we're called to evangelize, but what does it mean to evangelize? I think of evangelization closer to the model of making friends or falling in love with people, but it's falling in love with Christ, and less on the model of here's some pamphlets. Now, are you on the left or the right? Are you, you know, what do you believe? You know, here are the pamphlets, here's the evidence. That's not to say rationality doesn't matter in the Catholic Church. It's just that the Church's mission is not reducible to this kind of approach, like you said, a sort of resources approach toward the spread of the faith.
Well, and we're getting up to the break, but in the next segment, we'll talk about the narrative, the story of the faith, right? And like how talking about things in terms of stories sort of weds the worries we have about rationality, but with the goods of rationality. So this is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr, Dr. Jason Blakely is our guest. Stick around because this is a fantastic topic, really worth your time to listen to. And we'll be back more of The Uncommon Good right after this. Folks, if you want to make sure to be a part of what's going on with Iowa Catholic Radio, it's easy to do. You just need to follow us on the good old interwebs and social media. You can start with iowacatholicradio.com, where you can listen live. Hopefully some of you are listening live right now on iowacatholicradio.com. You can also donate and sign up for emails to keep abreast of what's going on in Iowa Catholic Radio and the Des Moines Diocese. You can also go to Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, befriend us, and then we will be Facebook friends. You can also go to Twitter and then follow at IA Catholic Radio, and then you will see, behold even, all of our tweets. Finally, you can download the Iowa Catholic Radio app. Wherever you have data, you can listen live, donate, listen to many of the sort of pre-recorded things that we have available on the Iowa Catholic Radio app. That's all easy to do as well. And then you can... There's something you do with Alexa I never quite understand because I'm afraid of robots. This is The Uncommon Good, and we'll be back right after this.
You can enjoy positive and inspiring music to help you through your day on the Iowa Catholic Radio app and iowacatholicradio.com.
Hi, this is Joe Stopulis. Thank you to construction professionals for underwriting Man Up, Monday mornings at 9 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Construction Professionals, a Catholic family business built on a strong foundation. CPCustomHomes.com.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Catholic Woman Now provided in part by Permar Security, a Catholic-owned family business providing security solutions for homes and businesses since 1953. Permar Security, 515-244-5660, permarsecurity.com.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Thank you, Golden Rule Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling, for sponsoring my show. John Lee and Eddie in the Morning on Iowa Catholic Radio. Golden Rule, servicing Des Moines for over 15 years. They obey the rules to live by, especially the Golden Rule. Online at goldenrulephc.com.
Thanks to Blessman International for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. Every year, Blessman International leads teams of Central Iowans to share the compassionate heart of Christ with orphans and vulnerable children in South Africa. You can learn more and sign up for a trip at blessmaninternational.org.
Here's your forecast on Iowa Catholic Radio. We have a cold front on the way. Things will stay fair through the afternoon. Sunshine with a few clouds. Our temperature near 80. The showers and thunderstorms are expected after midnight tonight, turning cloudy with our low in the upper 50s, and then a lot cooler tomorrow. We'll stay around 60 for the afternoon high. Wind will be gusty, and we have a good chance of rain and thunderstorms, and a few of those storms could have heavy rain. I'm meteorologist Steve Hamilton on Iowa Catholic Radio.
Back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr joining you this Wednesday. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting Iowa Catholic Radio. Today on the show, our guest is Dr. Jason Blakely, Associate Professor of Political Science at Pepperdine University, author of the book We Built Reality, How Social Science Infiltrated Culture, Politics, and Power. And if you really are someone who cares about the Beau recommendation, I recommend this be one of the next books you buy. Jason, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks very much, Bill.
Bud had a wonderful question, I think, that really bridges the gap between last segment where we were talking about your book. So, Bud, take it away.
Yeah, Jason, just as a preface, I'm a little nervous to ask this one because I think it could step on some toes, but we try to not avoid those cases. And if it's too much, you can just say pass, and Bo will have to talk. We'll put him on the spot. No, I think in saying that I could step on some toes, I found this article that you wrote on A Plague of Catholic Cafeteria Consequentialism really challenging for myself. And we're all familiar with what we call like cafeteria Catholicism, where members of the church maybe sort of personally opt out of some aspect of the faith. So, you know, famously, we think about politicians who say like, well, I believe this personally, but in my public life, there's something different that I'm held to, you know. But I think what's really perceptive about the article is we can all slip into this sort of thing. And maybe the best way to get at this is to unpack like this concept of consequentialism. I think one way that a lot of listeners will maybe grab onto it is when we think about why the church remained or has been really critical of the use of the atomic bomb in World War II, but then moving from there to like how we think about market economies, and they tend to be, you know, just like sort of the water we swim in, so we take them for granted, but there's some serious moral implications involved. And so, I mean, I guess I throw that out there, not, you know, you don't have to like go out of your way to offend any one person or whatever, but I think it's helpful for all of us to maybe be more aware of these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And so consequentialism is this philosophical term. It refers to ethical systems that decide what a good or bad action is based on the consequences of that action. And so they hold that actions are not intrinsically good or bad. It depends on the consequences of them within a particular context. Catholic listeners already hear something amiss because the Catholic Church teaches, and in fact, all traditional theistic religions teach that there are actions that are intrinsically disordered, evil, if you like, and there are actions that are intrinsically good, regardless of the consequences. Whereas consequentialism holds that the very same act might be good or bad, depends on a cost-benefit analysis of what follows from it. Really famous example of trying to illuminate this problem of consequentialist ethics from the famous Catholic philosopher Alistair MacIntyre is what you mentioned, the atomic bomb. At the beginning of After Virtue, he talks about how American political life in the 20th century was characterized by a very sharp incoherence. On the one hand, if you look at World War II, the narrative was what makes us superior to the fascist powers in Europe is that we recognize human rights, we see the dignity of individuals, and we don't use them as instruments to subordinate to some further good, right? So the sort of Saving Private Ryan narrative, I sometimes tell my students, if you like, the whole we go to save the last person kind of story about World War II. On the other hand, the argument that Truman made for the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the United States remains the only political power in world history so far to have dropped atomic bombs on people, and on top of that, on, in fact, non-combatants, women and children, was that the argument was consequentialist, right? The argument was, look, the Japanese are so deeply embedded in the Pacific theater that the cost to American lives is going to be steeper if we continue with traditional warfare. We need to sort of shock and awe the Japanese out of their position by dropping these bombs. And so there you'll note that that kind of reasoning is what I was calling consequentialist, where there's not an issue of is it intrinsically good or evil to drop bombs on non-combatants. Most rights discourses hold that it is. Certainly Catholic engagement with human rights has held that the dropping of the atom bombs or the killing of of civilians is a intrinsic evil, instead of slipped into sort of a cost-benefit analysis. In the piece, I argue that that kind of cost-benefit analysis is actually something that Catholics have become way too acclimated to in the United States, basically through neoclassical economics. And there's so many examples of this, but just to give one example, ask in a nice way your favorite Catholic friend, why do we have homeless in our society? There are societies that do not have homeless people on the streets. Now, maybe there are problems getting to that kind of a society, but there are societies where homelessness does not exist. It's eradicated. The Catholic Church holds that that kind of extreme poverty is an intrinsic evil or injustice. Now, you push people, well, why do we have it? And usually the argument that's forthcoming is a version of neoclassical economics. Well, we have a science, it is said, of economy that shows that the consequences of trying to eliminate homelessness, even though it might be good to do so, are worse for overall prosperity than the consequences of remaining, alas, with homeless people on the street. And so homeless people, you're really looking at a kind of human sacrifice to consequentialist reasoning. At least that's how I look at it on a Catholic view. Does it resolve for us what Catholics should do? No, but I think that Catholics, when they think about the economy, are not thinking in a Catholic way. So does it mean we should lavishly provide for the homeless via different local government programs? I actually might favor something like that, but Catholics don't have to favor that. We could disagree over that. What Catholics cannot do is rely on consequentialist reasons where we say, well, this homeless person has to live this way because it's better for money overall, or in the future, all these homeless people will be wealthy because all boats rise. There needs to be some kind of different argument there. So that's just one example, but I actually think that we slip into consequentialist reasoning all the time, unfortunately, and we don't really think with the church.
Well, and this goes right into this idea of heedlessness. Also, Alistair MacIntyre, I think this is the whole reason you and I started talking on Twitter, is the idea of heedlessness is we don't take heed of the person as a person. And so the question starts to be, why do we have this heedlessness, this sort of inattention to structural injustice, this inattention to the Imago Dei and other people? And this goes back to cult of evidence, like you're talking about. There's a way in which social science, as you've pointed out in the modern world, has sort of, I don't know the easiest way to say this, but it's done a good job of marketing itself as being something akin to physics, as it were. So when it says its idea about what the world is, it's easy to think, well, utilitarianism and ethical theory, that doesn't even come into play, Jason and Bo. These are just the facts. But of course, your book, and like I said, the introduction alone points this out. We all lived through the 2016 election where we all thought the experts said A was going to happen and B clearly did. So there's these deep questions. Not only why do we mess up evidence, but why do we misunderstand the role evidence plays in moral reasoning? And I think that gets to this heedlessness. If there's one thing as Catholics we should do, it's to take heed of the Imago Dei, to see the image of God in other people. What are we doing that entire groups of people that we specifically are called to pay special attention to fall into blinders? What have we done? And I that to me is why your book illuminates something so necessary for Catholics.
Yeah, thank you. And I actually think there's something really important you've connected there, which is that it is a good example of the way in which, say, in this case, I go into a lot of different instances in the book, but economists might tell you, look, I have a factual set of arguments. This isn't actually normally what they say. They normally say, not to get too much into the weeds of social science, they normally say I have an ideal model of rationality that helps me predict how people will act and maximize like preference outcomes and prosperity. But for the sake of simplification, let's say it's often presented popularly as I have a science of human behavior, and so I know that if you, well-meaning Catholic that you are, try to take action to eliminate homelessness, what you're actually going to do is dampen prosperity for everyone. Now, let's say I actually have serious doubts, as the listeners can go into my book and see why I have serious doubts that economists have that kind of predictive knowledge. But even if you grant them that predictive knowledge, note that that predictive knowledge does not resolve the moral question. We could still say, well, I don't value efficiency or prosperity over a society in which some people die anonymously on the street in the kinds of numbers that they die, or, you know, suffer in this way on the street. That question is not resolved by the evidence. And even for listeners who are skeptical of my line of reasoning here, what I would plea as a fellow Catholic would be, at the very least, we often think we've resolved it through evidence or through a scientific explanation, whereas all the moral reasoning is still left to be done. And in a way, we're letting popular economists be our moral authority. And so that is a real problem for people who say they follow Christ.
Absolutely.
If, you know, wise as serpents, innocent as doves, you need to be able to discern when economists are saying something that's helpful as a follower of Christ, and when they're saying something that might be confusing us or clouding our judgment morally about what's going on.
Yeah, Jason, as we've talked about these matters, like we've sort of, I think, come across not so helpful ways of thinking about these things. Like we mentioned proof texting in the first part of the show, consequentialist thinking in the second half. As Catholics, as we begin to think about like better forms of moral reasoning, do you have resources or maybe examples that you could draw upon? I know like in McIntyre's work, narrative becomes very important. Someone like Charles Taylor talks about like expanding our social imaginary, but I know this is pretty open-ended, but like, can you point to examples of like more faithful witness on the parts of Catholic thinkers or Catholic communities in the world?
Yeah, in 5 minutes, can you explain Gadamer? I'm joking.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, I think that it's a fair question. You know, all the criticism, where do we look as alternatives? For listeners who don't mind heavy philosophy, you can't do better than Charles Taylor, in my view, today. Well, McIntyre, for that matter. But Taylor, I really think, is probably the most outstanding living philosopher, and he happens to be Catholic. And it's not just my judgment. Even a lot of non-Catholics think he's the greatest living philosopher at this moment. So you could hardly do better if you like sort of heady intellectual, you know, argument than going into his book, Sources of the Self or A Secular Age. But I think that for people who are more sort of looking for a kind of immediate arguments and resources, I mean, this is one of the beautiful things about being Catholic. We're often sitting on all kinds of things that we don't realize. I mean, I know this particular one has become a bit of a lightning rod, but I was extremely helped. The thing that I read last year, which was a tough year for everyone, myself included, that most helped me was Pope Francis's Let Us Dream. And he keeps saying we have to imagine new ways of living. One of the most moving things he says in there is, a crisis always changes you. You know, you either come out better or worse, but you don't come out the same. And if you think you came out the same, it's probably because you came out a little bit worse. So does our suffering convert us towards something? But I also think of people like Dorothy Day, you know, who started the Catholic Worker Movement, her book Loaves and Fishes. I think, and I could go on and on because there are so many witnesses. I've been helped, for instance, by Luigi Giussani, an Italian priest, just to put another name out there that has been really an impact in my understanding of how to live a Christian life. But the wonderful thing about Catholicism is that there are so many different, there's a recognition of so many different paths toward holiness. But those paths toward holiness, I guess I would emphasize, are always voices of conversion and understanding our story better. And to just sort of make a final contrast here, I don't want to run out of time here, but Catholic wisdom is always narrative, right? I mean, we have stories. The Word became flesh, and there's a story we have to tell about it. That's not the same kind of knowledge as the sciences. The sciences, I actually think, are wonderful, and I'm grateful for them. But we always need stories. We haven't gotten beyond stories as humans, and I don't think we ever will. And we need to orient ourselves with our stories. For Catholics, that means let's go back into the sources of our stories. Let's listen to what Pope Francis is saying. Let's listen to someone like Father Greg Boyle, who runs Homeboy Industry, Tattoos on the Heart. That just occurred to me. Brilliant book really moving book for trying to rediscern what it means to be Catholic right now.
Yeah, I think that there's a whole week-long symposium where various converts in very different places, I'm including myself, run into people who bring up the importance of narrative, whether it's like for Bud and I at Duke, Stanley Hauerwas, and then Alistair McIntyre and Charles Taylor and Gadamer, all this name, that the common element to Catholicism is this reckoning with, well, you can be interested and deeply formed by all sorts of intellectual movements. But I think it's funny how many people started to explore the history of science or the history of the philosophy of science and ended up Catholic. It was very elemental for me. And it gets back to what you're saying is, if we believe in the Word made flesh, we don't believe that our faith is a standing reserve, a sort of inert thing to be used as we see fit, but a living thing that actually allows us to speak about ourselves in the light of truth, sometimes for the first time. And that has everything to do with things like evidence.
Well said. Right. I agree with that. And I think that it's about living stories better, understanding the lived stories better. That stories are the source of wisdom. Science is not a source of wisdom, it's a source of knowledge. Stories are the big reserves of wisdom for human beings.
No, I think that's a fantastic way to put this. So one more time, folks, Jason Blakely, the book that I keep referring to is We Built Reality, How Social Science Infiltrated Culture, Politics, and Power. But if you need something to read of his before, like you're waiting for the book to arrive, as Bud has linked in Church Life Journal, there's two articles by you, one about the New Atheists and one about cultural Catholicism. Jason, is there anything else you want to point people to, any initiatives that you would like to let everybody know about other than those?
No, I was just happy to meet both you, Bo and Bud, on Catholic Twitter. So I almost never recommend getting on Twitter, but Catholic Twitter is sort of an interesting corner of Twitter, and there is some of the leaven there, and not just bad. And it's kind of a tumultuous place. So if you want to check me out, I am on Twitter, but be forewarned that it's a tumultuous place. So.
Yeah, if you're ready to do some heavy sledding, Catholic Twitter's there. No. Well, Jason Blakely, again, thank you for coming on the show. His book is We Built Reality, and you can find his work on places like Church Life Journal. Jason, thank you again.
Thank you.
Well, Bud, before we go into the next segment or to end the show, I think Catholic radio itself starts to be precisely what we're talking about here. There's one way in which it can just be a sort of dispositive information that we share, but part of this is to try to thread all of this into a coherent story for people who are listening.
Yeah, I hope we are that sort of space. When you were talking near the end of the interview about these list of thinkers who have been influences, for a second I thought you were going to announce that the Center for Human Flourishing was going to like organize this symposium.
Maybe we need to have the symposium.
Invite Jason Blakely and Charles Taylor, 92, I think, or something, but still, he's still doing interviews and seminars and things. Very impressive set of eyebrows. I'm never going to match his intellect in any, like, not even approximate to it. But I feel like I'm getting there eyebrow wise, and so by the time I'm 68, if I'm still kicking it, I think people will be maybe deceived by the eyebrows and be like, this guy,
he knows
what he's talking about.
That's the same thing with like Alistair McIntyre, 92, I think, or whatever. He just still every November sits court and like tells it how it is at the November Ethics Conference in Notre
Dame.
That's
awesome.
So if I can be trucking along doing that at 90, whatever, I'll be very happy. This is the folks, wonderful show. Glad that you could join us. This is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, our family, city, state, nation, world, solar system, galaxy, the whole kit and caboodle. This is the Uncommon Good, and we'll be back next week. But if folks want to join us for our prayer life here at Iowa Catholic Radio, what are ways that they can do so?
Yeah, we invite you to join us in prayer. We broadcast the Rosary daily at 5:30 a.m., 9:30 a.m., and 9:30 p.m. We also pray the Angelus at 6 in the morning, and the Divine Mercy Chaplet is aired at 3 p.m. The Rosary opportunities and the Divine Mercy Chaplet are available anytime at iowacatholicradio.com or the Iowa Catholic Radio app.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about events, Iowa Catholic Radio events, which you can always check out at iowacatholicradio.com. It's like all music at this point. So I think that we're getting ready to get into the music biz. Matt Mayer will be at the Jamie Heard Amphitheater in West Des Moines Saturday, June 12th at 6 p.m. with Matt Baird, First Encounter, and JMMJ. Learn more at nightfireconcerts.org. The Iowa Catholic Radio Foundation welcomes country artist Lori Morgan to the Horizon Event Center July 15th with Jesse Keith Whitley and Eli Ilger. Learn more about reserving a table at celebratecountry.org, presented by Mercy One and sponsored by Valiant Health Wealth, excuse me, Family Office. Casting Crowns and Jordan Feliz will open the Iowa State Fairgrounds. Oh, we're talking about the State Fair already, bud. Show Thursday, August 12th at 8 p.m. You can learn more at iowastatefair.org. And then We the Kingdom will be on the Ann and Bill Riley stage at the Iowa State Fair Sunday, August 22nd at 8 p.m. And, bud, even today we were talking about, you know, the eventual broadcasting from the fair, so... Better get your sunscreen out.
Yeah, what is Casting Crowns? They might not be my cup of tea, but if I'm gorging on funnel cakes and fried ice cream, I'll listen to anything.
That's right. This would be a good time to do that. Folks, this is a ministry that extends far beyond those on the air, beyond the people behind the decks and behind the people in the office. It very much involves you, your time, talent, treasure, your prayers, your volunteer work, but very much your material support of us makes this possible. You can go to iowacatholicradio.com or on the radio, Iowa Catholic Radio app, or call 515-223-1150 to set up ways to donate. We appreciate your willingness to do that for us. And like I said, this ministry is possible through your generosity. And we thank you very much for that. Bud, make sure to enjoy the weather and have a good week this the whole week through.
Yeah, Phil Mickelson gave me inspiration for the upcoming Iowa Catholic Radio Golf Classic. If he can pull it off at 51.
We can too.
Yep.
This is The Uncommon Good, and we'll be back next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and The Uncommon Good provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Learn more at mchs.edu.